And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Letitia M. from San Diego.
Holy shit. That's tall. Can you raise this? Just hang out? Good? Okay. I'm Letitia and I'm a drunk. And yeah, I am. There's no doubt about that. First of all, I want to thank Randy for asking me to do this evening. And second, I want to welcome the people that are new here tonight. I used to love coming to speaker meetings when I was new because I just needed to hear more of a story than I just had a screwed up day. I just needed to hear a little bit of, you know, what it was like, what happened, and why the hell are you here? You know, and then if I am here, what the hell am I going to get out of it? Because I didn't understand that piece, you know. It's like, how just going to a couple meetings, is that going to change my life? The other thing I want to do is say Happy Mother's Day. You know, and it kind of goes a little bit more than just, you know, being a mother, but I'm sure everyone in this room has had a mother. That's a probably the only thing I'll be sure of this whole evening. So anyway, I just want to kind of get on with it. My name is Letitia and I am a drunk. You know, and I always kind of have to figure out if I'm in the right room because I've talked in a lot of different places and I'm, you know, it's like, oh yeah, Alcoholics Anonymous. You ever kind of sit in a place and, you know, at work, they sing happy birthday to you and at the end I'm saying, keep coming back, you know. wrong place. So this is out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 52. And I just kind of want to survey the crowd to make sure I'm in the right place. So, and you can do that by showing a show of hands or, you know, just a nod, you know, kind of like the auction room. If you have a little paddle, that'll work. But anyway, it says we were having trouble with personal relationships. We got one hand. Okay. All right. We couldn't control our emotional natures. A couple more. Okay. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. Okay. Some of us had that. We had a feeling of uselessness.
Yeah.
We were full of fear. We were unhappy. Okay. Unless we were loaded, of course. And we couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Yeah. You know, it's just a small little part in the book. There's a lot of good stuff in here. I am an alcoholic, and you know, you were talking earlier, Ken, you know, about coming from a divorced family, and I thought, well, shoot, that wasn't my problem, so that doesn't qualify me. I come from a family where my parents are still married, and I think they're 54, 55 years married, and they had 8 kids, and I was number 6 in that line of kids, and I'd say comfortably all 10 of us were alcoholics. You know, and if we weren't admitted alcoholics, we were at least all able to party hardy. And I have a couple witnesses in front of me that I'm getting the nod on that one. So anyway, I come from this crazy family that we're Irish, we're Catholic, and right there, coming out of the gate, I'm screwed. I'm absolutely screwed. And then I went to Catholic school, and that didn't help anything either because, you know, probably the only good thing from Catholic school is that I love uniforms and I love plaid. And then they had this God thing. And, you know, my childhood concept of God was there was this line here near my heart. And if I sinned, it got really black. And I thought, you know, I had about that much white and the rest of it was all black. And I knew I was going to hell. So I thought, you know, I don't know how to do this thing. I don't know how to pray and ask God to help me. And I'd be, you know, at home and my parents were crazy and there'd be violence and beatings. And, you know, I remember just a couple of times, you know, the brothers would all be in this brawl and I would go, dun, 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 I'm going to save the day and break it up. And I would get hit in the face and then I'd be in the brawl. And, you know, I mean, how do you have a God when you have a family that's that crazy? I come from an incestuous family as well. And, you know, what do you do when dad's coming in your bedroom at night? What do you do when your brothers are coming in my bedroom at night? Is there a God when that kind of stuff takes place? You know, and as a little girl, I remember sleeping under the bed, sleeping between the mattress and the box spring, and sleeping in the closet. You know, and that's what I had to do just to kind of have some kind of peace for the night. You know, and it's, you know, still to this day, I have to sleep on the far side, not near the door. I sleep on the far side. And today I know why. You know, because if anyone's coming in, they can have her, not me. There is a solution here. So anyway, I come from a really crazy household. And I remember, you know, when I got sober, I sought outside help. And I remember, you know, for that particular issue around an eating disorder and molest issues. And I went to this therapist and it was like doing a four-step, you know, a fifth step with her. You know, it's like, and they did, and this is what happened, and they did this to me, and they did this to me. And she sat there and listened to me, you know, politely for about a good 6 months. And I was seeing her 3 times a week. And at one point, she just looked at me, and she goes, Leticia, you can't have come from that family unscathed. Where's your crap? I immediately fired her, went and got another therapist. But you know, in what she was trying to tell me is that you can't come from that and then be, you know, saintly, worldly, you know, altogether mentally intact, you know. I mean, there was a lot of work I had to do when I got here. I drank a lot as a kid. I remember being, just not very high. And my first choice wasn't alcohol. It was narcotic cough medicine. And I used to climb up on the counter, and it was my mom had a case, and these tiny little bottles, you know, it's like the airplane bottles. They're still a great size. And so anyway, I'd take the cap off, and I would just down this cough medicine, and it was cherry-flavored. And I remember I loved how I felt afterwards. So I kept going back to this cabinet. And I remember one day someone had a cold, and she said, let me get the cough medicine, and it was gone. I mean, I was like, you know, it's bad when you're pouring water in it and shaking it just to get the last little bit out of it. So that was my first drug of choice, probably because, you know, the alcohol wasn't available to me. As I got older, I think I started drinking, and I don't really know chronological times and things of that nature, but I started drinking, and I think it was in like sixth grade, so I don't know how old I am, but I'm drinking. And it started out with a girlfriend and I, and we would split a quart of beer. And, you know, it's like, that's not going to qualify me for this program, but I'm getting to that part. So anyway, we'd split a quart of beer, and God, I felt great, you know? Suddenly I could sing, suddenly I could dance, suddenly I could talk to people. Because prior to that, as a little kid, I was always shy and terrified and kind of hiding behind my mother. And, you know, people just terrified me. And I never spoke in school. I remember my sister, one day, there was a man that had walked down the street, and, you know, and he'd ask me some questions. And as far as I was concerned, I was answering him. I had a full-blown conversation with him. I answered him. I was witty and charming. And we got back in the house, and she said, Leticia, how come you didn't talk to him? And I said, what do you mean? And she goes, how come you didn't say anything to him? Well, yeah, I did. And she goes, you never opened your mouth. But, you know, I just thought I was having conversations with people. And I remember she started giving me conversations lessons. You know, well, you have to say, how's the weather? And you have to, you know, and I'm standing up here tonight, and I'm thinking, I needed conversation lessons. And I didn't know how to be around people, and I was terrified and confused all the time. And here, you know, it's like I'm standing up here tonight, and I couldn't be more comfortable, you know, and I can look at people in the eye today. So anyway, back to my drinking. It started out with just, you know, splitting a quart. And then it was, I want my own quart. And then it was, okay, we'll get a quart, you know, 3 quarts, and we would split it so I'd get a quart and a half. But knowing me, I probably chugged a little more than she did, so I'm sure I got more than a quart and a half. And then it was like, okay, we'll get our own, you know, I get 2 quarts, and she would only take 1 quart, and she'd want some of mine. I wouldn't give her any. And, you know, but suddenly I could talk to people, and I could dance, and I could climb trees higher than anybody else, run faster. I didn't even need PF flyers. it's a part of a dating on myself. But so I got through high school, and the way I got through high school was I drank a lot. I was really good in school. I didn't need to study. You know, if I listened to the teacher, I could pass the test. So I was really, really smart in school. And except till I got into high school. And when I got into high school, I found chemical substances and more alcohol. And I used to go into school. I dated a guy that was 26, and I was, I think I was about 16. And I would go to his house at lunchtime, and I'd come back, and I'd be rip-roaring drunk. And I remember one day going into this typing class, and you know, and we had these machines, and you know, they were trying to teach typing through. This was a long time ago, because now I think it's the only way to learn, you know, through technology. But we had these little headphones on, and we had a little cassette player, and we put the typing lesson in. Well, for the first 6 months of school, I was going to school doing psychedelics and drinking, and you know, other kinds of smoke substances, and I would just go up and put whatever tape in. I pulled all the dots off my typewriter, because you're not supposed to look at your keys. So I pulled all the dots off my typewriter, and I'm, you know, just listening to Pink Floyd, typing away, and you know, never handed my assignments in. So this one day I go into school and I'm just rip roaring drunk, and the typing teacher comes up to me, and I think I was doing psychedelics as well. And I went up and I asked the girl, I said, so what lesson number are we on? She goes, oh, we're on number 9. I don't think I ever picked up more than one. So I put number 9 in, thinking, you know, I should be there. And, you know, I've got my cape on. I'm, you know, da-da-da, I can do 9. So I go back to my seat and I'm typing and my fingers are jamming and I don't know where the keys are. And I'm just, you know, and it's not Pink Floyd, so I'm not mellow. And I took this cassette and I, you know, well, first of all, I raised my hand and I asked the teacher to come back and talk to me. Well, he didn't even know I was in his class. And I felt he was ignoring me because that's what, you know, drunk people make up ideas in their head. So I took this cassette and I threw it against the wall and I said, F you, I'm out of here, you know, making it his fault because I didn't know how to type. And he blocked me at the door, and, you know, I was raised by 4 brothers in violence, and so he didn't survive. And so I made it up to the guidance counselor, and she happened to be counseling with somebody at the time. And I just walked in, and I'm from New York, and I've had to temper that. And so I walked up to the counselor, and I just said, you, out of here. I need to talk to her. And, you know, the little student kind of leaves, and I'm, you know, now I'm sitting down with the school counselor, and you know, there's a problem, and it's the typing teacher, and I am ripped, and she starts asking me these nice, you know how they do that really nice tone, soft voice, so how's your family life? I'm like, family life? I'm not here to talk about my family. Well, anyway, long story short, I was like the final person to complain. Here I thought I had all this power, but I found out later that I was the final person to complain about this type of teaching, and they got rid of the machines, and I went in, and of course I'm either, you know, at the bottom of the heap or the top of the heap, and I went back in, and I took that class, and I vowed never to do any psychedelics or any kind of chemical warfare or drinking of any sort in this classroom, and it didn't last long, but nonetheless, that's the kind of person I was in high school. I would just be rip-roaring drunk. I'd go in, and I'd take a class, and I remember one time doing I guess this is Alcoholics Anonymous, no more psychedelic stories. So let me move on to another one. I ended up, something happened to me in high school, and I started to excel in high school, and I became the editor-in-chief of the school newspaper, and, you know, and I graduated. I found out that I was 1 credit shy of graduating at 16. And I thought, damn, now I have to go back to school. Last year of high school, and I only took 1 class. And I figured, well, what the hell? If I have to get up and go there, I might as well take more. So I graduated with beaucoup credits. And I remember going to the guidance counsel one time saying, you know, I want to go to college. And she says, well, you know, let's talk about what kind of money your parents have. And I said, oh, never mind. That's not going to happen. And I left the guidance counselor. And I never pursued the dream of education. I just, you know, it's just like, you know, kind of the alcoholic that I am is if it looks easy, balls to the wall. If it looks like there's any kind of challenge, never mind. You know, I'd go take piano lessons, and because I had to practice, never mind. If I I wanted to learn ice skating, but then you fell down. Never mind. You know, I want the easier, softer way in everything that I do. So I get out of high school and I just kind of start floating around. And that one thing about keeping a job, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do and I didn't know how to get a career. You know, if you didn't go to college, I mean, I had all these crazy ideas in my head. You have to go to college to get a career. Otherwise, you just don't get one, and you have to wait on tables. So I started waiting on tables, but I was a terrible waitress because I have ADD, and I get distracted, and all of a sudden, I'd be in another restaurant waiting on their table. Something happened. Something happened. So I couldn't stay focused in anything. And so what they did is they made me the manager. And now we're talking. You know, I can get you guys to do everything, but me too. I will start a project and hand it over. I can solve a problem, but I can't maintain doing it. And that's, I don't know that I want that one to change. I still like that one. So I'm floating around, and I got to this place where I was born in this house. Actually, I was born in Canada, raised in Long Island, New York, and I was in this house for 18 years. And my parents sold the house, and they moved to Florida. So I just started moving a lot. And it seemed like, once they kind of knew who I was, I'd wear these bars out. And once they knew who I was, it was time to go to a different bar. I was never the kind that as soon as you walked in, they put exactly what you were drinking up top. Because if you smoke Marlboros, I smoke Marlboros. If you drink gin, I drink gin. If you I didn't know what I wanted. I had no idea who I was, what I liked and what I didn't like. If you like that, I'll try that. I'll do that. Yes, let's do that. Oh, you like that? It's just insane. So I started moving around a whole lot when I was younger, from 18 to when I got sober when I was, 28. I forgot how many times. I counted one time. I did an inventory. So I count things. And I think I moved to 29 places in 48 years. And two of them were almost 20-year stints. So we're talking maybe about a 9-year time period, and I moved 29 times. So do the math. That's a lot of moving. And I lived out of duffel bags. I had 10 duffel bags and a bicycle. And I went from Canada. I left Long Island. I went to California. I'll get myself lost if I try and tell you all the places I've moved to and lived. I've lived in tents. I've lived in high rises on the beach. I have lived, I've lived a lot of places. But what it really came down for me was I would get uncomfortable. And I would have to move. I would just have to move. People at work would start finding out that I drank a lot, and I'd have to move. Or I wouldn't be able to get up and go to work, so I'd have to move. I mean, that was my solution for everything. It's just time to move. I even had a T-shirt that said, "It's time to move." Now in sobriety, I use that. It's time to move to help other people move. I just want to stay in one place. So so I did a lot of drinking, and I always got that manager job in a restaurant and a bar, and for some reason they always gave me the keys to the restaurant and the bar and the liquor cabinet, and I had to do inventory. And I learned how to fudge inventory numbers real well. If you just say the bottles are there, and they're not, and then I have a good liquor cost, and nobody ever came in and inventoried after I inventoried, so I always had a really great liquor cost, so I managed these places well. The other thing that I did was, if I'm going to drink, you have to drink. I mean, that's the rule. That's just the rule. And I used to keep the best drinkers after hours, and we would lock the doors to the restaurant, let the guys clean up and all that stuff, but we'd be bellied up at the bar and we would just proceed to drink. And that was exactly what I call it's proceed to drink. It's so dramatic. And we would just drink and drink and drink until the sun came up. And I don't know if any of you have ever drank till the sun came up. It's this hideous experience. It's just like you're in this dark place and you walk out, and it's like vampire time. Wow, sunshine! I'm gonna die. I'm gonna melt. And you hurry up to Denny's. And they have that back room that's not in use. Can we have that room? And I lived in New York, and the bars closed at 4 a.m. And I come to California, and you guys close at what, 1? 2? It was awful. It was awful. So I just drank a lot. And one of the things about me that I, you know, and I knew I had a problem with alcohol. I just didn't know that if I didn't drink it, most of it would go away. I didn't know that most of the problem would go away. So, I drink alcohol and I'd say, you know, tonight, I'm going to go out and I'm going to have a couple. It's my sister in the front. I'm going to have a couple. And, and I made that resolve all the time. And I sometimes held up to it. I'm not going to lie to you. Sometimes I did. But I never knew when I would go into a blackout. I can't say every time I drank I went into a blackout, but the odds were high that I was going into a blackout. And, you know, and I did all that shit, you know, tried beer, tried brandy. Oh, brandy, I love brandy. You know, I would get a cold just so I could drink brandy. I don't know. My hangovers didn't hurt them as much the next day when I had a cold and drank brandy, because I wasn't sure if it was the cold or the brandy or the hangover. So anyway, I drank a lot. And, I have stories, and I didn't think I had stories when I got here. And I kept talking to this old-timer, and he'd say, oh, yeah, I got stories. And he says, Leticia, you only have one story. I was like, oh, no, not me. What about the time when I flew down to Jamaica and strapped all the drugs on my legs and had to have really a lot of rum prior to getting to Jamaica, and then I don't remember landing, and then I think I was there for I don't know how many days. Most of it was a blackout, and mandrakes were down there. And So anyway, that's not a story. And he kept saying, you have one story. Well, what about the time when I came to in an apartment building and I I came to and I'm looking around going, okay, the clothing is on. All right, that's a good sign. There's no furniture in this place. And I'm looking around and it's all beige. Everything, carpet, walls, ceilings, furniture. I mean, not furniture, cabinets in the kitchen. And there's nobody there but me and my hangover. And I'm looking around going, shit, where the hell am I? And I look out the window, and I lived in Long Island. It's real flat, real flat. And it's suburbia. It looks like these neighborhoods, but flat. And I look out the window, and I am, I don't know how many stories up, probably about as high as I am right now. And I'm looking out the window, and I have terrible fear of heights. And I'm looking out the window, and I'm like, holy shit. And there's buildings all over the place. Well, it turned out I was in New York City. And I don't remember getting there. I don't remember who got me there. I don't remember any of it. I remember this kind of a party I was at, and then kind of in and out of a blackout, going to the second one, and how the hell am I in New York City? And then New York City is probably about a good 2-hour drive from where we were at in the city to where I lived in Long Island. And I woke up going, oh, shit. And I had that thing called a hangover. And my favorite description of a hangover is it feels like someone beat you over the head, beat your body to a bloody pulp on the inside, threw a bag of shit in your mouth, and a team of horses rode over your body. I mean, and the yellow bile in the morning. You know, whenever I talk, I'm always looking, you know, does anyone got that color on? You know, it's this yellow bile, and if you know, it's just like Jello. It's coagulated Jello. And, the head hurts. You can't even drink water, because if you drink water, you're going to throw up more of that yellow bile. You just dilute the bile. It just sucks. It just sucks. You can't eat anything. You can't drink anything. And you just want dark curtains. And so I woke up that morning, and, again, I was alone, and I didn't know how I got there, and I didn't know how I was going to get home. That happened to me a lot, way too many times. And this guy came back, and he said, I'm really sorry I had to go this morning, but he owned this apartment building, and he had to go and kind of deal with tenants, and he was plumbing, and the water was being turned off. And he said, but I could really use your help. Sure. Sure. What do you need? Who are you? I don't know. Where are we? You know? No, sure. No problem. So he asked me to go downstairs and hang out in the office and, you know, take the phone calls. I mean, and this is a huge building, and all these people are in the midst of taking their shower and suddenly need to call me because the plumbing is turned off. So I spent my morning with my hangover, with my bile, with my headache, answering these phone calls. And I, you know, panicked, terrified. I don't know how I'm going to get home. I don't know what's going to happen to me. And he said he knew I was from Long Island, which is great. And he would not be able to take me home. So he would, you know, and the part of the story is I was 16. You know, it's not like I was 28, you know. Could have worked it better. I was 16. So anyway, he ended up getting a ride home for me from these two people. And it was the longest ride I've ever had in my life, because it was a man and a woman, and the woman was grilling me. So how long have you known him? I'm like, I don't even know his name. I don't know his name. I don't know nothing. And she's, you know, she's, so where did you meet him? I don't know. I'm not answering that way. I'm just saying, well, what did he tell you? You know, discreetly having to find out what I did the night before. It gets old. It gets real old, you know. So anyway, I have these stories, and I have quite a few more, but, you know, you kind of get the gist that I had a problem, and I would black out, and I would do things I wouldn't ordinarily do sober. So this old-timer used to tell me, you know, you only have one. And I said, well, what story is that? And he says, what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I've told you a little bit about what it used to be like, and I have a lot more stories. If you want some more details, I'll give them to you later. But what happened for me, you know, I'm drinking, and I'm trying not to drink. And I remember drinking, and it was like, felt like this doom cloud used to come in. It's like, oh my God, I just felt like something was going to happen. Something bad was going to happen. Well, duh, I was going to get drunk and black out, and then bad things were going to happen. So what happened for me was I had an ex in Florida, and I used to call him all the time. And I would call him loaded, and it was 3 o'clock our time, or 2 o'clock when the bars closed here. And it's a 3-hour time difference. So I'm calling him at 5 in the morning, 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, you know, and I'm like, you know what the drunk sounds like. And I'm trying to talk to him, and he kept saying, Leticia, how's your drinking? Because by this time, after I left him, he went to Alcoholics Anonymous and got sober. So I would call him, and he would say, you know, how's your drinking, Leticia? And I said, well, you know, my sisters are worse than I am. They are way worse than I am. Why, as a matter of fact, I went to bed at 3:30, and they went to bed at 5. That's worse. He wasn't buying any of it. He kept saying, Leticia, how is your drinking? And I kept saying, well, it's not that bad. And he says, why don't you go to Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, and he talked about Alcoholics Anonymous. He talked about, you know, having a God in his life. And I remember being confused by that, because he was a wild atheist. You know, that's why I hung out with him. And he started talking about this relationship with God, and he was praying to God, and I thought, oh, God. So, there was something different about him. Something was happening to him that it wasn't happening to me, so I used to call him a lot. And he'd say, Leticia, go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would come up with another excuse why I couldn't go. Well, no one will go with me. Nobody. I ask everybody. They won't go. And he says, Leticia, just go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And one morning I called him, and he said, Leticia, you're going to come up with any effing excuse not to go. Call Alcoholics Anonymous. And he hung up on me. And I was so insulted. He hung up on me. And he said, and when you call Alcoholics Anonymous, ask for a schedule and go to a meeting. And I called the next morning. I called central office, and I asked them if I could get a schedule. And the guy says, well, where are you calling from? And I said, well, I happen to, you know, just moved to San Diego, and I'm living at the Handlery Hotel until our apartment is ready. And he said, oh, isn't that great? Because there happens to be an Alcoholics Anonymous convention right in the hotel you're at. Just what I wanted. And he said, yes, as a matter of fact, there'll be 5,000 sober alcoholics dancing. I, you know, I'm the girl that hung out with all the band rodeos, and I would, you know, walk in, and they'd put a pitcher of rum and coke up and 2 straws, and sometimes it took me 2 pitchers of rum and cokes for me to get on the dance floor. And that's how I managed to control my drinking, was if I was busy dancing, I wasn't drinking. But unfortunately, I drank 2 pitchers before dancing. Something was wrong here. So anyway, he kept telling me that go to Alcoholics Anonymous. There's this big, beautiful dance downstairs, and my two sisters, my drinking buddies, were with me in that hotel, and I remember saying, "Hey, there's an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting downstairs, and they have dancing." And they were like, "Well, there's a bar down there, too. We'll see you later." And they went off to the bar, and I'm sitting up in my hotel room, and I'm thinking, I have a problem, and I don't know what to do about it, and no one will come to Alcoholics Anonymous with me. So I just really struggled. Well, it was about a couple weeks later. That guy kept talking about God, and I thought, I know, I'll go to a church. So I took my little nephew with me in case the priest caught me, and talked to him. But when I was in the back of this church, which is right up here, on the back of the table there was the 20 questions, and I took them home. I stole them. I thought I stole them. But I stole them and I took them home. And I remember, you know, my drinking buddies, we all need to go to AA. So I took these 20 questions and I have, still remembers it. So I have these 20 questions and I am now quizzing everybody. Because we all have to go to AA. We have to. Because I have a problem and so do you. Because I drink with you and I know. And you're worse than I am. Because you go to bed at 5 and I'm in bed at 3. So I know you're bad. I know you're bad. And they were, you know, God, we would do these questions and they were like, you know, no, I don't have that. I'm like, you're full of shit. You're full of shit. That's a yes. That's a yes. So they would leave and go to the bar. Well, I'd follow them to the bar. And I remember I made copies and I had some extra pens. I mean, I really wanted to go to Alcoholics Anonymous and I really, really wanted someone to go with me. Because I can't go anywhere by myself. So I take these 20 questions and I'm in a bar and I'm saying, okay, come on, gather around everybody and rally, you know, and I'm, you know, people will gather around. And, you know, and I'm getting them to answer the questions. And I got some real live ones where they were answering a lot yes. You know, we thought we had to get all 20 yes. I didn't realize that, you know, 3 or more. So I, you know, and I still have my original 20 questions. I taped it to the inside of my 12 and 12 because I never want to forget it. But I answered those questions to the best of my ability. I got 17 yes, thought I needed 20, and I was working on the other 3. So I taped these questions up to my bedroom door because my hangovers. And that was when I felt the worst. And, just the physical hangover. Half the stuff, I don't remember what I did. If I remembered that, I'd probably feel bad about that, too. But most of the time, it was my physical. And I would walk out of my room with that hangover and the bile and the daylight, and I would look at those questions, and I'd, someday, somehow, I'm going to do this thing. Somehow. And another part of my what happened was my sister got caught drinking at work. She passed out in the corner. The restaurant was left open. The money was out. The police came. They couldn't find her. She was really well hidden in the corner doing some stuff. And see how bad she is. I was passed out in the car, though. I'm not so bad. I know when to go in the car. So I'm passed out in the car, and the police come, and the district manager comes down, and she has to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. She has to go in order to keep her job. And I was so happy. Yeah, we're going to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I'm dressing up. We're going to Alcoholics Anonymous, my sister and I and my sister-in-law, and we dress, and we go to North Shore's Alano Club. And I'm so happy. Now, I already had the schedule and circled all the ones where we need to go and how, you know, this is great. There's so many of them. And we're going to go to the one right down the street from Cass Street Bar and Grill. You know, thinking, I don't know what I was thinking. Could I go there after? I don't know what I was thinking. I was happy about that. So we go down to North Shore's Alano Club, and it was a speaker meeting on a Tuesday night, and the guy gets up. He was hysterical. He was talking about being drunk under the bushes, and I'm like, yeah! God love newcomers. Yeah! And I'm yelling out, yeah! And then he started talking God, and I was like, no! Not the God thing. Please, don't do the God thing. Plaid is fine, not the God thing. So anyway, I had a great time in that meeting. I had so much fun. You know, the lights were on. God, I used to hate drinking in La Jolla because the lights were on. So I'd end up down at Joni's, of course, where the lights were dark. I was telling my sister here, if they could just lower the lights a little here, I'd feel a little more comfortable. So anyway, we went to our first meeting, and it was great. And the next night, my sister says, okay, well, we need to go to another meeting. And I was like, why? Why? Well, we have to go to another meeting. And thank God she did that, because I would have thought, hey, now I'm done. So we went to the second meeting, and it was horrible. It was awful. This person complained about their washing machine and their dog and their children and nothing that I could relate to. Absolutely zero. And we went home that night, and I thought, God, this is a death sentence. I'm not going back there. The other place was funny. This place was horrible. So I ended up going to bed. My favorite thing to do, just go to bed, just check out, floor-to-ceiling drapes, put me in the darkness. I also drank a lot of NyQuil. I don't know if I hear anyone here. I got sober, there was all these NyQuil bottles under my bed. The trick with that is if you drink too much, you get hyper. So as I was trying to balance, you know, all right, that's another story. So anyway, I went home for 3 days, and I'm in bed. I'm in, and I'm supposed to go to work, but that's irrelevant. I'm in bed. And I woke up after the third day, and I walked out of my room, and I went, oh, my God, I have to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went down to a meeting, and it was a four-step study, and it was a closed, structured step study, but I don't know how. They're not listed in the meeting. I don't know how I found this place. And I walked in, and I watched how the room worked. You know, everyone went around, and they all shared, and they were talking about four-step stuff and inventories and sex inventories and money inventory. And I was like, man, this is cool. I got excited. You know, here's people talking about real stuff. You know, what's your sign, you know, in the bar? You know, it's not very real. So I ended up, you know, I was like, and everyone had these ditto sheets because it's an Avelco step study and they have ditto sheets. And so I asked for a ditto sheet, you know, and they went to skip me. I was like, wait a minute. I want to do this thing. And can I have a ditto sheet? I can't believe I'm asking for homework, but can I have some homework? Can I do? Because I want to do this thing. And they gave me the ditto sheets, and they said, please keep coming back. And I thought I was dismissed, and I left. And I drove home that night, and it was my first spiritual experience. It was the first time in my life I ever clipped a seatbelt on. And this was long before the law. You know, now you have to. But this was long before the law, and I clipped my seatbelt on, and I started to sob. I just started going, oh, my God, I want to live. Because I was suicidal for so many years. From a little kid, I remember always sitting there thinking, you know, I'd go to the woods, and I would just want to cut my wrists. I just wanted to bleed to death. And I'm thinking, but how could I do that and leave my sisters? You know, sometimes I think, you are the only reason why I'm still here. Because I couldn't take my life, because there were other people that needed me. So that night I clipped on my seatbelt for the first time, and I said, you know, that was my first day in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to do this thing. And I've been doing this thing for 21 years. And I'm as excited now as I was back then. It's never, ever gotten boring for me. I remember it did one time, and I went to an old timer. Tell the truth. I went to an old timer once, and I said, you know, it's the same old, same old, same old, you know, the same thing. People share the same shit, and nah. And you know, and I'm kind of bored. And he just said, when was the last time you crossed the room and shook a newcomer's hand? When was the last time you asked a newcomer out to coffee? When was the last time, you know, and I was like, okay, I'm backing up. You got your point. When was the last time you offered to sponsor the craziest person in the room? Not too often. So anyway, I started this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, and they said, get a sponsor. And somebody ought to tell me what time it is, because I better. What time? Hate that. Hate that. 6 minutes? Oh, man. So anyway, I get this thing called a sponsor, because that's what they said, get a sponsor. And, you know, remember I was at that four-step study, my first one, and they, you know, sex inventories, money, and all that stuff. Well, I went home and bought a little journal, a new one, because I used to write and drink all the time. My drinking journal is called Emotional Trauma. I named it long before I got to this room. And when I got to this room, I started an inventory, and I wrote down everybody I ever slept with. And then I thought, I wonder how many I did with them when I was sober. So let me highlight the ones that were sober, and there wasn't anyone. So I thought, well, let me highlight the ones that I wasn't sober with, and I highlighted them all. And then I wrote down how much money I thought I owed people. And boy, justification comes in real quick. Well, really, she gave it to me, you know. So anyway, I got busy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I took good orderly direction from a lot of people right from the get-go. And I'm really grateful I did, because if I had to wait a year or 2 years to get something on paper, oh, I'm a procrastinator. I would never have gotten there. So for me, it was like, hurry up, lest the test of time come. Hurry up and get something on paper. Hurry up, sit across from somebody else and figure out how to do this thing. So I got this thing called a sponsor. I went to a women's meeting. I high-heeled up and clicked my little high heels and blue power suit, and I went up to this lady, and I said, how do you get a sponsor? And she says, here, questions and answer on sponsorship. Read this and come back next week. Oh, man, was I pissed. I really wanted the answer. I didn't want to freaking read something. I just wanted the answer. Tell me how. I was desperate. And she said, read this and come back. Well, I didn't go back. I showed her. So I went to another meeting and I was saying, so what are their responsibilities and, how can I hold them accountable? I thought it was a job function. And someone just said, if somebody shares something that sounds interesting to you, because, I hated a lot of things that were being said, and if something sounds interesting, ask them to be your sponsor. So I asked this woman to be my sponsor, and one of the things that she did for me, which is just so magnificent, I got exactly what I needed in every sponsor I ever had. I used to call this woman at 2 in the morning. I'm up. Isn't everyone else? I'm up. Self-centered. So I called her at 2 in the morning, and she said, let's meet. So I met with her, and she handed me 5 speaker tapes, and she said, Leticia, if you ever need to call me past 10 o'clock, listen to all 5 of these hour-long speaker tapes. And if you still need to call me, you can. And I was, I never needed to call her after that, past 10 o'clock. I used to call her at 9 and 8, but at past 10 o'clock, I would just put these speaker tapes on, and it would be Chuck C. and Clancy and Father Martin and Dottie Shore and Ted Harbuck and just some great wisdom that I felt like that little bird that bounces around, are you my mother, are you my mother, are you my mother, and the snake and the dog and the horse and nobody's qualifying, and that's what I felt like. Do you have my wisdom? Somebody give me some wisdom to how to do this life, how to get through this fear that I feel all the time. So I ended up doing the steps with this woman, and I remember doing the third step with her, and it was kind of strange. And they say, let's close the meeting in our usual fashion. I'm like, it is so unusual. Hold hands and pray with somebody. Still, I'm okay with it now, but it was weird for a long time. So anyway, I get on my knees with this woman in her apartment, and we say the third step prayer, and she says, Leticia, another smart thing she did, she said, Leticia, let's go line by line and figure out what it is that you just read. And, when I read that prayer, I offer myself, okay. But one of the things that I struggled with was I was like, take away my difficulties. I don't have any. I have a house and a car and a job. I don't have any difficulties. And she goes, oh, honey, you're terrified. You're afraid all the time. You can't talk to anybody. Those are difficulties. And I was so happy. I have difficulties. It was just fantastic. It was great. Because all I wanted to do was belong. I ended up taking my journals, and I handed them to this woman, and I said, here's my journals. And, she met with me the next week, and I said, did you read them? And she said, no, I didn't read them. I said, do you need to hold on to them a little bit longer? Because there's good stuff in there. And she said, no, honey, no. The fact that you were willing to give them to me tells me how willing you are. Tells me that you're going to make it in this thing. Because that was my biggest fear, was that I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to do it right. I'm not going to be the best AA there is. I might be for 2 weeks and then be bored. And I've managed to do this thing for 21 years. And it's at the core of my heart. Because anytime I ever think about what it felt like for me to walk in here new, not certain of what a life would look like without drinking, without partying, without blacking out, without vomiting and bile, I can't imagine. So I came here and you guys told me I didn't have to drink one day at a time. That this one guy used to say, I didn't do anything to embarrass my God, my family, my employer, or myself. And I thought, oh my God, I want that. Because I had embarrassed myself a lot. I'd embarrassed my employers a lot. I embarrassed my family, but they're more embarrassing than I am, so that disqualified it. Am I done? I'm done. I could go on forever. I really could. Because I love this program so much, and I love the step work that I found. If you, at all possible, put the pen to the paper and just start writing, and I didn't know how to write, and I didn't know what to write. And I remember just saying, this woman said, just pray, God, reveal yourself. Reveal what you need to know just for right now. Reveal to me what I need to know for right now. And my pen wrote and wrote. I was about 12 years sober, and I had boxes of journals. And now today, I keep it really simple. I take out one piece of paper. I write. I flip it over. I write. I flip it sideways. I write. I flip it. It doesn't matter what I'm writing anymore. It really doesn't matter. All I know is that when I start writing pen to paper and I ask God for help, all kinds of amazing things happen. I am grateful to be sober. I am really grateful to be sober. I will close with this prayer that I heard 21 years ago, and it made sense to me because it sums up what Alcoholics Anonymous is for me. And it says, I sought my God, I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. And I sought my brother, and I found all three. I found my soul in these rooms, I found my God in these rooms, and it's a God that I can say God and fuck in the same sentence and nothing's going to happen to me. And that's the kind of God I can do business with, because if it was about clipping on halos and looking good and being perfect, I wouldn't make it. So my wish for you is that you all get to stay here. You get to find somebody you can travel beside. Grab a few people, travel beside them. We don't do this thing alone. And God bless you all.